Hi, everyone. It's so nice to be here. So I'm also a professor in marriage and family therapy at Azusa Pacific, and they have a regional center down here in San Diego, which trains people to become marriage and family therapists, educators. We have a theology department, and we have an education department. So I sometimes get a little teachy and professory when I speak, but I'll try to tone that down. But yeah, I opened up San Diego Institute for Couples and Families because the number one therapy that fails the most is couples counseling, and it's because most therapists have never even taken a course in working with a couple. And if they have, then it's just a smattering of theories and whatnot to pass a licensing exam. So in my heart, I was like, San Diego needs a place for Christians where they can go and really get good couples counseling. So that's my passion. And then I accidentally landed in the field of sexuality because when I did my advanced training, they had a whole year in human sexual function and dysfunctioning in medical school. So part of my program was connected to University of Penn School of Medicine. And so I just accidentally got this training, and then when I came out to California, I kind of keep it on the down low, but other people know that I can work in this area, and I also teach human sexuality at Azusa, and I taught it at Bethel University as well, but it's just really interesting how it intersects with relationships and how it's all intertwined, and all the latest research is showing that. So that's what I hope to show you today is the research on that. Okay, so I asked my female students, say, I'm going to go speak on sexuality. What do you think I should talk about? And they talked about how women are slow and they need to get warmed up. And then, make sure you tell them that women are like crock pots, but they are warm to get cooking. And then the men are like, my male students are saying, oh no, just make sure you say, we can't get no satisfaction. Make sure you play that song if you have music. So yes, even in graduate school, they're still saying things like that. So, yeah. So, I want to talk about the three different kinds of sex that we're having and then what science is saying about it and what science is now saying about sex, because a lot of research has poured into this area of relationships and sexuality, and it's really interesting. A lot of the neuro research is so interesting. And then I want to give you the three key ingredients that science is now saying that is going to make our sex better. So the new science of bonding and relationships show us that there are really three kinds of sex that people are now having. And one of the kinds is called sealed off sex. So this is, it's all about having an orgasm. It's all about your sexual prowess, right? It's just about having sex. The name of the game is the more is better. And the relationship with the person is only secondary. So, and that's a really bad thing for long-term relationships, right? We don't want to just be used. And by the way, the men who come into my practice whose wives just say, okay, let's just have sex, go ahead, they hate that. And men are, they don't want that kind of sex, actually. They don't want to just perform. And the opposite of loving someone, so if you're just having that kind of sex and you're not loving someone, the opposite of loving someone isn't hating them, it is using them. So it's very usury, and it's impersonal, and most people feel used and emotionally alone, and regular physical contact attunes us into the need at where we feel emotionally close. So you don't feel close in this kind of relationship or with this kind of sex. You just kind of feel used, and that's not a good thing. So then this other kind of sex is called self-comforting sex. And this occurs, it's when we kind of feel like, oh, does our partner really love us? And we need lots of reassurance. So we're having sex that get reassurance or to win their approval. And we concentrate on cuddling and affection rather than abandoning ourselves in lovemaking. So really good sex is where you can be absolutely vulnerable and just abandon yourself, right? And just kind of go with that. And that's also what makes a good relationship, when you can be vulnerable and really talk about your really deep emotions with each other versus have reactive emotions. So comforting, tender touch is part of good sex. But in this kind of sex, the comforting sex, people get preoccupied with reassurance. So the eroticism suffers in this kind of sex. So in this kind of sex, people are very susceptible to signs of rejection. And when the lover says, "I just don't feel like it tonight," they take it personally, and it is not a good thing for them. And then that person who says, "I'm not really interested," then the other person kind of comes on. And so the big thing with this is that there's insecurity in the relationship, right? They don't feel safe with one another. And as a result, they end up pressuring each other to have sex, and then they get into arguments and fights, and then they disconnect. And the number one cause of divorces today is disconnection. So we don't disconnect over fighting. We don't disconnect over finances. We don't disconnect over our kids. We don't even disconnect over, we don't even divorce over affairs. But people will divorce when they emotionally disconnect. So this is a very, if you're having this kind of sex, this comforting kind of sex, then it's probably a little flag that, hey, you better think about working on your relationship. And then the third kind of sex is called synchronized sex. And this is what couples have when they have a strong bond with each other and they're responsive to one another. Right? So it's when everything comes together, and it's the sex that fulfills, satisfies, and actually connects you. Because when you have sex, there is a hormone called oxytocin that actually knits you together. And Helen Fisher at Rutgers University is an anthropologist that's been studying this, and she is now saying, don't have sex with someone unless you want to have kids with them, because if you have sex with someone when you're a teenager, when you're older, it's actually going to knit you to that person, because the oxytocin, when you have an orgasm, knits you to the person, and then you're going to want to stay with that person, whether that person is really right for you or not. So the key prerequisite here is not wild sexual lovemaking. The safer we feel more emotionally, the more we can communicate and express our needs, the closer we become in this. So there's a lot of oxytocin, there's a lot of connection in this, and you can express your needs and you can come to each other and say, "Hey, I really care about you." So there's a lot of emotional safety in this kind of sex. And it deepens our bond with our spouse. It makes our bond even deeper than it is. And then lovemaking is a reliable source of eroticism and joy, right? Because you feel completely safe with each other. And think about, put that in on the back burner, because I'm going to come back to that feeling completely safe. So the truth is that we all, both men and women, long to be loved, right? Men do not want to just have sex, right? Think about it. When men are in the world, they're told to just suck it up and be a man and don't show your emotions. So where can they actually be vulnerable in their life? They can be vulnerable when they come home, and where do they get held and caressed and where they can feel safe? So it's a need that both men and women have. And we won't kill ourselves if we don't have sex, but we will kill ourselves if we don't have love. So this is, and that's why porn is so bad, because when you open your eyes, there's no one there loving you back. We are wired for love, right? Where God put an amygdala in our brain, and we are wired to be loved. And that's the new science. And so both men and women are craving intimacy with each other. And this intimacy directly relates to the sexual intimacy that we can have. And I wanted to show you a picture of the amygdala in the brain and what it looks like. So, you know, God kind of wired us to need him and then to need someone else and to need each other. We're not wired to be alone. So couples get disconnected when the sex dies down and in some cases stops, right? Because there's no oxytocin knitting them together. And having children disconnects us, careers can disconnect us, fights, business, finances. There are a lot of things that can disconnect couples. I remember when my first child was born, I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna put it in the agenda, and you know, I'm gonna just manage this and put her in an agenda. And then when she was born, oh my goodness, I was just so enamored of her, and I was like, okay, husband, you can go now. I'm totally fine, and wasn't good. And then I realized, like, oh my gosh, I just love this child. And then I was thinking, oh my gosh, I love this child. I feel more love for her than I do for God. And I love God. And I was like, oh boy, that's making me nervous. That's not good either. So a lot of things can disconnect us and with what we're doing in our life, right? And when we get disconnected, we polarize. And it, remember I said emotional disconnection is what causes divorce. So when we get polarized and we get disconnected, we are susceptible to getting divorced. And this is kind of, I thought this was a good comic. Apparently I've done something to upset you. This is way too far for me. I put the barbed wire at the bottom of the steps. He can't even come upstairs. So we understand that behind all the fighting, yelling, so when I have couples that come in, they're crying, there's been withdrawing, we can always find two struggling human beings with broken hearts, longing to be understood, right? There is a longing. We will kill ourselves if we are not loved. And John Bowlby, I put his name up here because he's the psychologist that said years ago, hey, if you let kids be with their parents in the hospital, they're going to get better faster and easier. Because years ago, like, for example, when I was in elementary school, I was in a sledding accident, and I hit a tree, and I had to spend the night in the hospital. And at 8 o'clock, parents had to leave, and the kids were there by themselves. And John Bowlby said, no, we can't do that. We have to let parents be here because the kids are going to get fast. They're going to heal faster and easier. And the biggest question is that we're asking ourselves with our spouses, do you love me? And we know that in North America, this is crazy, but we are living very isolated lives here, right? We're very disconnected, even in the context of marriage, right? Marriages, I've come to learn over the years in working with couples that to actually be one with each other, like Scripture is calling us to do, is kind of rare, right? Close to 50% are getting divorces. Of the 50% that don't, we see a lot of people living as roommates versus being one. So that's not good either. And in North America, there's an ongoing loss of connection in community, and technology is taking over, so it's getting smaller and smaller. And most of us have experienced fewer and fewer people to confide in. And a quarter of people say, isn't that crazy? A quarter of people say that they have no one that they can confide in. So that's why being in the body, being together, being connected like you're doing here is just so amazing. It's so good for you, and it'll keep you alive longer. So now we know that we need this connection from the day we were born until the day we die. We used to just think, oh, this is just what kids need with their parents. Now we know that we need this until the day we die. And have any of you had connections with people like grandparents or people that maybe siblings, maybe friends that have died, had a really good connection, and even though they died, you still feel connected? Can I see a show of hands? So that's what, yeah, so see, that's what connection does. Like, if the person leaves, then you still feel that connection. It's that strong. Okay, so with a sense of connection. So when I say a sense of connection, I'm not talking about you know it, right? So we can tell our children, I love you, I love you, love you. But if they don't have a felt sense of it, it's going to go in one ear and out the other, right? So we know that we know that we love our spouse, but our spouse has to have a felt sense, and we have to have a felt sense that I am cared for. And that's what we do with couples when they have these injuries. We go back to the injury and we try to repair it, because we want the spouse to have a felt sense of what their partner went through and how bad it was for them. And then when they feel their partner, what they went through, and then they can communicate that they feel it and their partner feels it, then it begins to heal. So a felt sense is very different than just knowing. And if you don't have this felt sense, then we feel emotionally deprived and even starved. And this is when people begin to kill themselves, right? When they feel so starved. So we know that God made us this way. We weren't created by God to feel disconnected. And if you look at our health, without this connection, we become more prone to stress and even crime. And isolation and lack of secure relationship is infinitely more dangerous to a person's health than smoking. Can you imagine that? So feeling disconnected and not feeling like having a felt sense that your partner is there for you, is you might as well chain smoke cigarettes. So it impacts our cardiovascular health and immune system. And then when we sense that we are emotionally separated from, rejected, or shut out by our loved one, it triggers the same part of the brain that pain does, that we have physical pain. So it's like stepping on a nail. When we have a felt sense of a secure bond, we're stronger, we're more successful, we feel better about ourselves, we will live longer. But people who are emotionally disconnected are at 500% higher risk of immune disease deficiencies, heart attacks, strokes, depression, and anxiety. So it's really bad for our health. So good, this kind of bond and this kind of connection is integral to our being, right? It's very important. So let's look at how that relates to sexuality now. Let's loop back. And the research is showing us that couples, 100% of couples who feel like they have a secure bond say that they feel they're happier, they're closer, they're more intimate, and they're able to forgive each other, even in affairs. They're even able to get through that and stay happy for years later. So with some of the affairs that I've worked with couples, it's amazing what their relationship is like. After they work through the trauma of the affair, they are so much closer. They're going to survive. They're going to be awesome. It's crazy how good it can get after they work through it. So if we teach distressed couples to have a secure bond with each other, it will literally change their brains. They'll be healthier. They'll calm down. And their sex life will be better. So I had a couple that came in, and he was a doctor, and he's like, you've got to help her. You've got to get her to a psychiatrist. She has so much anxiety, and she couldn't even sit down. She wasn't even calm. And it was all about their relationship. And probably another therapist would have said, yeah, you are anxious. You do need help. You better go to a psychiatrist. But if you just wait long enough and you work on their relationship, she actually calmed down like no one's business. She couldn't even sit for weeks, and then as each week went by and as they got closer, she calmed down. She was completely calm, and their sex life was restored after that. So our culture is saying women want intimacy and men want sex, but men want sex because that's where they can be vulnerable. That's the place where they actually feel loved. So they want intimacy also. They don't just want sex, because where else are they going to feel close? So those who can count on their spouse and feel secure will have a secure bond, will feel closer, and then they'll have sex more often with each other. And having a secure bond and trusting your spouse is actually the biggest aphrodisiac of all. So if you have a bond and you feel safe, then you can say, yeah, not tonight. Let's just cuddle. Let's just hang out. And then if things kindle, great. But if they don't, then you've had a good time together. You've been close together. But you feel safe. You feel secure. You don't have to perform. You can be vulnerable. You can say no. You can say yes. So let's look at the three things that the three key ingredients necessary to have great sex and have a good relationship. So this is what healthy couples have. So think of the word, the R, and we're going to use it as an acronym. So the A, we need to know our partner is accessible. So can I call you and say, hey, I need you? Well, no, I can't because I have a business meeting, but I can meet with you tonight. Okay, great. So tonight, he shows up, I show up. Do you hear me? So do they respond when we tell them what's going on for us? And then are you tracking with me? Are you emotionally engaged? Like if I'm hurting, do you feel that hurt? And do you kind of hurt also? So ask yourself right now, which part in the R do you feel that you're missing and what part your spouse needs more from you, right? I tend to the E, engaged. I tend to like problem solve and not empathize as much as I should empathize. So I know that I need to spend more time on empathy first and then problem solve later. So accessibility is the A, responsiveness, and emotional availability. So R is a very special type of emotional presence from our spouse. It keeps people we rely on very close to us. So this emotional presence of our partner is a powerful safety cue to our brain, right? And this, when we feel safe, it turns off brain and it turns off fear. So we're going to be less fearful. We're going to have less pain. They did this study where they hooked electrodes up to a woman, and they wanted to measure. They sent in just a little bit of electricity, and they wanted to measure the pain level and her anxiety level with the electricity. So they sent her into the lab, hooked her up, sent in a little bit of electricity, and her pain and her anxiety was off the charts. So then they sent in one of the clinicians to be with her, and just because somebody else was there with her, it brought down her pain and it brought down her anxiety. And then with her spouse, who she felt he was accessible, responsive, and emotionally available, he came in and was there with her, and same amount of electricity, she no register on the pain or the anxiety. Isn't that crazy? Same amount of electricity. So that's what a good relationship does. So there are two moments that couples find that we can either move into. So we're either disconnected and the emotional bond is lost, or the other is you feel safe and you can go through anything. So what happens when people get disconnected is the R isn't there. They don't feel their spouse is accessible, responsive, or emotionally available, and then they start to move away. So we know that there is no perfect lover, right? So this, before she gets married, how worse is this going to get? So So marriage strips away all of the illusions about sex and intimacy pounded into us by the media, right? So a few of us live with oversexed supermodels. We live instead with ordinary people, men and women who get bad breath, body odors, unruly hair, who menstruate, PMS, PMDD, OCD, ADD, ADHD, PTSD, who attend AA, NA, OA, SA, and who could experience occasional impotence. They have bad moods, they make man sounds, and they embarrass us. So they looked at this, how people fall in love and they're on an endorphin high for about 2 years, and then all of a sudden reality hits and they wake up one day and, oh my gosh, who am I living with? What have I done here? And a lot of people divorce around the fourth year, so that kind of makes sense, right? The endorphins go away around the third year, and then that fourth year is really important. So how can a man who can hit a deer at 200 yards keep missing the toilet is what I want to know. And then this one, I know what women want. They want you to drag them to the bedroom, throw them on the bed, and do the dirty dishes while they take a nap. Acts of service, yes. So the fights that matter are never about sex, money, or the kids. It's just on the surface. So the most terrible trap in a marriage is when one person really wants to say, where are you? Do you love me? Do you care about me? And don't I matter to you? But instead becomes critical, demanding, while the other person feels hopeless and inadequate and moves away. And there's your disconnection. So this is going to cause emotional starvation, it's going to stalemate and more disconnection, and then the sex just goes away. So intimacy leads to sex, and sex ushers us into a union with a significant person, probably the most significant person on earth to us, right? More than we can imagine when we're in our late teens. So we need to understand the way God designed it to be, and we are lucky if we can participate in it the way he meant it to be, right? He's calling us to love each other, and he's calling us not to use each other, right? I have a son who's in college, and, trying to teach him, if you're not loving someone, are you going to use them? And so then what are you going to do there? And if we look at C.S. Lewis, he said when he talked about sexual intercourse outside of marriage is that those who indulge in it are trying to isolate one kind of union, the sexual, from the other kinds of union which we were intended to go along with and make up the total union, right? So secular research, that's what they're showing us. If you don't isolate the sexual act from the other kinds of union, it'll be the best sex that you've ever had. So the best aphrodisiac of all is when partners are accessible, responsive, and emotionally available. It provides a safe adventure in the bedroom or other creative place. Touch arouses and comforts, releases the cuddle hormone oxytocin. And that's why the pharmaceutical oxytocin is so addictive. And it releases dopamine, gives a natural high, and lowers pain. And good sex is better than any drug. So the strongest among us are those who can reach and be there for others. So it's the best, love is the best survival strategy of all. And self-sufficiency is not what we thought about it. We want people to be self-sufficient, but kids will be self-sufficient when they know that they can depend on their parent, when they have this felt sense that their parent loves them. The same thing with our children. We need to be accessible, responsive, and emotionally available, right? And when they feel that, then they feel safe, then they're going to feel confident, and they're going to go out, and they're going to soar in the world. Same thing for us. So I wanted to talk about one thing, which is desire. And so when you have children, so desire levels really plummet. A lot of people are walking around with low testosterone. So I always recommend when people talk about they're not interested to also just, it's a simple blood test. and they will see if the testosterone, how low it is. And it might be within the parameters, but you might be on the lower end and you might need to be on the higher end. So testosterone, as we age, wanes, and that could be a problem with desire. But also, because we're so busy and we're multitasking and we're moms and we might be working as well, doing a lot of things, we're not sexually activated, right? So sometimes a spouse will come and want to have sex, but that's like the furthest thing from our mind. So, but desire can be kindled. So I had a couple one time where he woke her up in the middle of the night, and he was desirous, and she's like, absolutely no way, I don't want to do anything. But just for an hour, he just stroked her back and just stroked her, just was there. And then within an hour, her desire rekindled. And then they had, and it was worth, she said, not getting her sleep for that hour. But people wait for desire. So we have a lot of desire when we're teens, right? And in our early 20s, we have a lot of desire because the testosterone's high and the hormones, and we're just, life is fun and we don't have any worries. We're just doing fun things, and so we're unimpaired, right? But when we have kids and we're worried about finances and we're taking care of our families and possibly working also, then desire is going to go down. So if you wait for the desire to happen, then you could wait a year to have sex. So you might want to try to kindle the... So I tell everybody, just try to kindle it. And it's a good thing because if you were connected, you feel close. If you don't have sex, then you felt close and you felt connected. But if you did have sex, that's awesome also. So just because we don't have desire doesn't mean that we can't kindle the desire. But couples that wait for desire could wait for a whole year for that desire to kindle. Or it could be twice a year, it could be four times a year. Okay, and then I thought I would throw up the 10 aphrodisiac foods that you can also throw into your diet. I had no idea avocados. I had no idea honey. I had no idea bananas. Okay, so do we have any questions? Okay, so this person wants some advice on a couple where one is the fixer or problem solver and one is the empathizer. So I would just, therapy could be one thing, right? But I would just say, hey, I just need you to hear me right now. I don't need you to fix anything. I just need you to hear me. Because, in fact, my next slide talks about this. In love, you don't need to be rich, smart, talented, or funny. You just need to be there, right? So you just need to be accessible, responsive. So you could actually teach your husband how to just be there for you. And, in fact, I gave you a handout which has 10 questions on, or it has a bunch of questions, a series of questions. And I gave you two handouts because you can take one home and give it to your spouse also. And it'll, if you answer these questions, it'll let you know where you are with the ARE, right? If you need to improve, if you're doing great, or if you are in need of help. So why don't you take a minute right now and do those questions just to see where you are. Okay. How did you do on the quiz? Okay, so now you know kind of where you are with that and what you might want to work on and what you don't need to work on. So let's, so go ahead and take the second sheet home and give it to your spouse and see what their answer is, and then you can talk about it. So, okay, I'm going to answer some of these questions. So is low testosterone test for men and women? Yes, and it's a simple blood test. And as we age, we lose testosterone, our desire wanes. Also, our sensations wane. We need more direct more direct stimulation and for longer periods of time to be able to achieve orgasm or to feel better. So our skin, our nerve endings actually start to wane as well. Okay, any advice on getting a spouse to put away technology and be more engaged? So I actually, a month ago, reported my husband's phone missing. I called the phone company and said, that number is lost, and yeah, I did that. But I think also if you tell them how you feel, hey, I really want to connect with you. Can you put the phone down? Can we just spend this time? There's a little exercise where you just lay on your bed and you lay your heads on your pillow and you just look at each other and just kind of put those phones, kind of get an agreement to put the phone and the computer away and the iPads and all of that. And just spend some time, and it'll be invigorating if you can get them to do it. And then what is a good amount of sex to have for a healthy relationship? Everybody is different, right? So some people, once a week is great. Every other week is great. Some people want it more a week. And different stresses in our lives change it. So there is no one norm. But as we get older and as we get busier and as our hormones are changing, it does wane a little bit, so it's not going to be as much as when we were first married. What advice do you have for couples that are disconnected? I would just get some help. Like, really good couples therapy now can be like 12 to 20 sessions. It's not, you don't have to go in for years on end. A really good couples therapist who has advanced training and has really poured themselves into it really knows how to go in and reconnect people. So I would just get some help. There's a book out there called Love Sense that kind of describes what I talked about today. So there are lots of good books that can help also. And then this one is, when two people are really different, what do you know that is possible to stay together happily? I have friends where he is like extreme extrovert and she is extreme introvert. And he is extreme physical activity and she is extreme, I want to just sit and think and I want to write. And they have found ways to kind of connect. So, like, they bought a motorhome, and they'll go to this spot, and he'll invite friends, and they'll go on a hike, but she will only hike as long as she wants to, and then she'll go back to the motorhome and spend the whole day while he's out with all the friends hiking, and then, so he'll come back hours later, and then they'll eat dinner together, and so she'll come out and socialize and have dinner. And then he might stay up. He might want to sleep out on the ground. She goes back into the motorhome. So they found ways. There are lots of ways. We call that complementary relationships where, opposites attract. And you just have to find a way to kind of manage it but still stay connected. How do you deal with the relationship with your spouse when this stage in your life is being asexual and you don't want to be touched? but you don't also want to neglect your husband. So that goes back to desire, right? That goes back to feeling overwhelmed, so you want to be vulnerable. Just talk about that. I'm overwhelmed. I have so much. I don't have the feeling, but I don't want to neglect you. So even that is going to start connecting you. That kind of a conversation starts connecting. It's vulnerable. And then that's about desire, which is kindling the desire. And they have some books. There's a book called 101 Great Nights of Sex, where the pages are sealed. So one is for him, one is for her. And they have really, some goofy things in there, like get a swimming pool, those little blow-up pools for your toddler, put it on your bed, fill it with water, put roses. I mean, they have all these different, they have 101 different suggestions. But when we lose desire, when our testosterone, when our hormones are off, we do need a little help. So kind of just looking for, okay, how can I spice this up? And some people go into it and they're like, oh gosh, I can't believe I'm doing this, but their desire actually gets ignited. So also getting away for even a couple of hours, or even like my favorite time to date is during the day versus at nighttime. I love going out and hiking and being out during the day. I know Bill Hybels puts his wife in his agenda for every Thursday morning for the rest of the year at the beginning of the year. Like that's their date time. And he doesn't let anything interfere with that. So, you just want to look for ways to kind of spice the desire. And then again, if you don't have the desire, but you've had a fun time and you've laughed and made fun of each other. How do you spark romance, verbal, same thing. Just sparking, just doing different things. Don't do it in the same place at the same time all the time. And then also, somebody had, how do you communicate this to your teens? I would just talk to them. I would just be open and very nonchalant, especially I've done talks before on how to teach children about sex, right? And it in developmental appropriate ways. And the biggest thing is just to talk to them in a very nonchalant way, very educationally. So I would say to my son, hey, there's this researcher out on the East Coast who talks about that if you have sex with someone, that there's this oxytocin and it knits you to the person. So, you might stay or marry the person that you shouldn't be with. What do you think of that? And, just lots of conversations, very nonchalant. Use appropriate terms for the body, but very nonchalant and very educational. And it'll be amazing. Your teen will come to you and ask you questions about a lot of stuff if you start when they're young, talking about it. Like, or if they say, "Hey, mom, where do babies come from?" They don't want to know. They don't want to know the anatomy, how it possibly actually happens. They just might want to know, well, where do they grow? And so there's like a series of questions that you could ask to kind of unpack. What are they really looking for? What do they know already? And any information that's too much for them will just go right over their head, and then they'll come back and ask you. So it's a really good time to start talking to your kids about sexuality. And also you can take them online and show them pictures of the body. And don't just focus on genitals, right? You want to focus like, oh, wow, look, this is the heart, and this is your liver, and this is where your food goes after you've eaten. And these are the lungs, and this is where you breathe. And, then you can go to the genitals, just very nonchalantly, the whole body, and then just kind of talking about it. And they also have great books for kids, too. with anatomically correct parts and just talking about it. So I would start when they're young, and then that conversation will. My 19-year-old at college still calls me about stuff. So, okay.
So this is female sexuality, and I hear you talk a lot about igniting desire within the couple, but I was just wondering if you had any strategies on kind of kindling desire just within us, like something that we could do as females to think about our spouse differently, to set aside time for him. Last year, I remember one of my mentor moms said, if you pray for your husband and really put your husband in your heart, that's a way that you really start to think about him as a soul, as a person, and try to connect with him. And another speaker talked about making your room a sanctuary. So those were two kind of strategies that we can do that don't really involve our husband, but will help us to think about our husband in a really positive way that encourages and kindles that romance. Do you have any suggestions for us?
Did those work for you?
Whew! Well, for me, having a clean bedroom is a big deal, because if I'm looking at the laundry over in the corner and I'm like, all I think about is the dirty dishes, and it's like, it's just too much. It's just one more thing on my plate. But by taking that off my radar at that point, it's easier for me to get outside my to-do list in my head. So for me, that has helped. But I just wanted to know if you had any other ways that we can, as women, put our brains in that intimacy place.
Yeah, and candles help, and just really thinking about loving them versus, like, how can I show you? So maybe showing him, making love is a way to really love him, because where else is he going to be held and be able to be vulnerable in a world that says suck it up, right? So he needs that. He longs for that. Men don't just want us to just give it up and have sex. So things like that. The other thing is what I find a lot of times is women who don't have orgasms. So orgasms are really important. So I think it's important for women to make sure that they are having orgasms, because that's going to make it completely different. And so sometimes that kind of goes away. And I think it's important for us to either figure out how to do it on our own, or to, and I also help clients do this, or to do it, to learn how to do that with the spouse. So, if that's a part of it, then you're going to want to go back to that kind of a part. You're going to want to go back to that, right? So that's another big thing. But I like the idea of making the room a sanctuary and thinking about loving him, praying for him, being a place where you can actually love him in a world that's telling him not to feel and to just suck it up. Yeah. Anybody else? Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you so much. Thank you.